Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's story with Rory. I am Rory, and I am joined by my two... If I am the admiral of this fleet, I'm joined by my two captains, Christopher Scott Irvin and Jonathan. I think I've forgotten your middle name.
I've got two, so you've got a good chance of guessing one of them.
Oh, you got John as one of your middle names?
No.
I know you.
I've Oscar, frozen. It's Oscar Isaac because he wanted to join. His parents wanted to join as his. Yeah.
What are your middle names again?
James William.
James, I knew that. J-J-W. I didn't remember William. Yeah, and these are my loyal companions as we adventure into the world of, you know, Scottish stories and history and nonsense. How are you two boys doing?
Where do we begin, Rory?
Well, shall we start with Johnny finally getting the vid?
Yeah, I got COVID this week, which is a major bummer. Kind of annoyed about that. I'm fine, everyone. Don't worry. My voice is lowered in tone slightly
sexy
this week. But I did get COVID after all this time, which is kind of a major bummer. But I'm well and very thankful for being vaccinated because I'm not very sick. So yeah, that's good. You know, every cloud.
I did not get sick, but I have re-entered the workforce. Oof. After 2 months on sabbatical or paternity leave, whatever you want to call it. And it's been an adjustment, Rory. You know, I'm very exhausted, questioning a lot of life decisions. And you know, there's a lot of sort of staring into the abyss.
Sounds like we're right coming now into this with the same mental state for this episode, Chris.
Yeah. What about you, Rory? How are you feeling down?
Oh, this week? Yeah. Well, like I was saying before we started recording, you know, we've all got our struggles. Johnny got COVID. You've come into work during one of the most turbulent and you know, newsworthy times of our generation, and I spent a week on the beach in Hawaii. So everybody's got their crosses
to bear or something.
It's tough getting sand in your shoes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And there was that time when the snorkel wasn't quite working, and the goggles kept on getting steamed up, and I couldn't see all the tropical fish I wanted to see. So that was annoying.
Are you okay though? Are you all right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm after, you know, probably a couple of years of therapy, I'll get over it. But right.
How much water did you take on?
A lot of rum. I'm not gonna lie, a lot of rum.
Oh, good. out of coconuts.
Yeah. They don't have glasses in Hawaii. Only coconuts.
What's the outside like? Like, what is fresh air?
It's honestly, it's like mid 80s, really sunny.
Yikes.
There's terrible. Beautiful oceans. You should check it out sometime.
Why are you being like this?
What is fun?
I mean, look, stop getting diseases and stop having children. This is very easy.
Fair enough.
You can enjoy life when you don't do those things.
I'm still waiting for the seed money for my doggy daycare bed and breakfast bar that I'm going to set up somewhere. I was kind of hoping that you'd be my backer.
Yeah, but this is no, because I think you also want me to do all the work as well in this. Like,
that's not true. I'd work the night shift at the bar.
Yeah, but we need a business plan. We need a loan. We need to source a space. Yeah, exactly. This is my problem.
Yeah, you're the money guy. You know, I'm the banter guy.
That's not a thing. That's not a real position.
I'm the hype man.
Chief banter officer.
Yeah.
CBO is not a real position in our company.
I think you'll find it is.
Well, look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry the two of you have had a rough week.
I think it's karma, to be honest, for Johnny and I crapping all over your last episode. Which, in hindsight, after listening back to it, wasn't as bad as I thought it was in real time, and some of it was actually kind of enjoyable. So got to apologize for being such a negative Nancy during the actual recording.
Well, I mean, that is generally the vibe that the two of you bring, is let's come in and shit on all the time and effort that Rory has put into this. And then afterwards be like, oh yeah, it was actually quite fun, actually. I had a good time, thanks.
We like to keep you grounded. That's our role, you know. Don't let you get carried away. Keep your feet on the ground.
I don't think you need to. I'm at this point, you're putting me 6 feet under. So stop it.
Well, good thing you've got a snorkel.
Well, the good thing is I've got an exciting story. Exciting. Yeah, it's definitely
exciting.
Oh,
here we go, Johnny. Here's another shit story.
It's exciting, and it's also, I don't know if it's very Scottish, but it's very, it's fun, because I think we talk a lot in this show, this podcast, about, like, we're advocates for Scotland and all the great things that we've done and everything that we've invented and blah, 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 blah. This story is definitely one of our significant failures. This is the story of how an entire nation was duped into giving away their life savings. Like, the entirety of Scotland was your granny on the phone to a Nigerian prince. Like, that's where we're going with this story. We're talking about the Darien scheme.
Is it Darien or is it Darien? Have I been mispronouncing it wrong?
I've heard it pronounced both ways, and it's the same. Like, whenever you look up how to pronounce something on the internet, it is a robot saying it. So I'm going for Darien.
It's like this last week I've been hearing the Ukrainian capital called Kyiv a lot, and yeah, my whole life I've been calling it Kiev.
Yeah, me too.
When did it become Kyiv?
I think the reason we call it Kiev is because of the chicken.
Isn't Chicken Kiev named after the Ukrainians?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they called it Chicken Kiev, and so that's what we went
for. It's actually Chicken.
Chicken.
Chicken Kiev.
Chicken Kiev. Chicken Kiev. And the Holy Bible.
Yeah, no, it's just jarring. It's jarring here in Kiev. Maybe it's a British thing. Maybe the British call it Kiev.
Yeah, it's like how we mispronounced all the cities in India. Basically, just went in and renamed them because we couldn't
pronounce.
I think
you'll find it's Bombay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, if any of our Ukrainian listeners are listening to us right now, need a bit of brevity of Elon Musk's Starlink, then just tell us, is it Kyiv or Kiev? You know?
I have a feeling they might have other better things to be doing right now.
Yeah.
Could
be. But if you don't,
it has been.
You're going to have some downtime. I mean, it's really crap there right now.
Oh, of course. It has been interesting listening to all the kind of regular podcasts I listen to. And they're all nonsense podcasts, similar to ours, just, you know, either talking rubbish about rugby or movies or whatever else. And each one of them has taken a moment to be like, you know, we stand with the Russian people. And obviously, this will do nicely.
Stand with the Russians. Russian people.
Is that what I just said? Yep. I'm going to have to cut that out.
Is that what this podcast is going to do?
No.
That is,
you've sided into some dangerous territory here, Rory.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm definitely cutting
Rory, I have a question for
out.
You. You used to have a Russian girlfriend. Did you see this coming?
She was American. She was technically American, born in America.
Russian American, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, no, I did not. my knowledge of Eastern European politics and the antics of a psychotic despot is limited, I will say. I didn't really see it coming.
Okay.
Johnny, you're being very quiet on this. What's your thoughts?
I don't have any Russian girlfriends, fortunately, so I'm going to stay out of that one, probably.
Obviously.
Maybe if anybody from Marks and Spencer's or British Supermarket is listening right now, if they could set the record straight, whether it is Chicken Kiev or Chicken Kiev. I would love to know.
Yeah, they'll be the ones to know, the Brits.
Yeah, if one thing comes out
it's Burma.
If one thing comes out of this geopolitical nightmare, at least Britain will figure out how to pronounce the capital of the Ukraine. And yeah, also their Friday night dinner special.
Not to go in too much of a tangent, but
it's too late.
Do you remember our lunchroom, a school lunchroom used to do Chicken Kiev? And every time you bit into the first bite, it would just...
Yeah,
it was like the temperature of the sun.
Spit out at you, yeah, like a cobra.
I mean, it was devastatingly hot in the middle. It was a dangerous thing. Yeah, I mean, much like the Ukraine, it was a very dangerous thing to get into. All of this is getting cut out.
And much like dangerous things, let me tell you about the Darien project.
All right, well, tell me, how much did you two know about the Darien or Darien project?
Nothing, I don't think.
Right.
I think you're the first person that's ever said it to me.
I vaguely remember having a lesson in school about it.
Really?
I genuinely think it was like one lesson, and I forget what the context was. I think it was maybe talking about the British colonizing America, and there was like I don't know, maybe it was like just a filler day or
like
something.
A passing
comment. We were ahead in the textbook, and then the teacher sort of was like, "Let me tell you about how Scotland tried to do colonization and completely buggered it up."
Wow.
So I've always been aware of it, and I know that it's seen as like Scotland's greatest folly or one of its greatest follies. But yeah, I mean, definitely it was definitely in school, like just in a random lesson one day.
I don't remember it in school. I feel it's something that we should definitely learn in school. I don't think I heard about it until after the podcast came out. Somebody, I think one of our friends, like I'm thinking like Duthie or Jamie, said, "Oh, you should do this. It's fascinating."
They were both in the lesson with me on that day.
Jamie didn't even go to school with us.
I know, that was the weird thing.
That is weird.
I heard you guys have some really good chicken Kiev. I'll pop in. We don't know you for another 3 years.
Jamie, I bet you fucking loves a looper situation? Chicken Kiev. Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And then...
You've broken the timeline in our cinematic universe here.
Yeah, it's going to be complicated. We're multiversing. Everybody else is doing it. We got to do it.
Yeah.
The multiverse where Jamie Crook went to Hutchie.
I wouldn't bloody think so.
I'm not going to that shit
far too niche. I'm going to stop doing impressions of our friend from university.
Yeah, but I don't think... It would be an understatement to say that the Darien Project is one of the most important historical events that happened in Scottish history. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, the way it shapes our future from then on is, it's a linchpin. It's a Rosetta Stone. It is a turning point.
It's a George McFly.
It is.
Biff Tannen situation. Is that what you're getting at?
It's exactly what I'm saying. And if we are talking about Back to the Future, I would say our Marty McFly is the Scottish economist / banker William Paterson. And that's kind of where our story starts, is with this young entrepreneur, excitable young man, born April 1658 in Skipmire, which is basically just a farm in Dumfries. And he, very early on, like he was fairly well educated. His family were farmers. And he went off to seek his fortune, you know, where every young man who wants to go and find, you know, riches and success goes in the world. He went to Bristol. And
Bristol's great.
Bristol is great, sure. That's, you know, like I said, it's where everybody goes to seek their fortune. And he spent a wee bit of time there, but then very quickly as with a lot of people around this time, went off to the Caribbean side. He, in particular, went to the Bahamas. And it was there that he got into like trading. He became a bit of a merchant. There's a lot of stories of where he was possibly a pirate, but it's difficult to get distinct, you know, facts around what he did or did not do. And this,
what, sorry, what year was this, Rory? I think I missed that. Chicken.
This would be 1675.
Okay.
So like he was born in 1658 and he's about like, he's a late teen at this point. And so, yeah, he did pretty well as a merchant slash pirate. And I do think around this time, those people traveling around in boats, buying and selling.
I think the term is privateer. They prefer privateer.
Right, exactly. They were selling, stealing spices, you know, slave trading, like stealing land, selling whatever they could get their hands on. It's that thing of like, oh, are you just a merchant trader or are you just stealing people's stuff and then selling it for your own gain? And that's basically what he did. And he was very successful at it. So he moves back to Europe. He actually sets himself up in the Netherlands and Holland. And it was around this time that he meets Lionel Wafer. And Lionel, I know it's a silly name.
Story, well. It's a story a bit thin.
A great name.
Wafer thin. Well, so Lionel was a Welshman.
Thanks, Johnny.
I like that.
Thanks, Johnny.
I like that a lot.
And you know what it's like with the Welshmen. You can't trust them as far as you can throw them. And so Lionel started spinning the story to William about how he'd spent time in the, and I'm going to mispronounce this, the Isthmus of Darien, I-S-T-H-M-U-S. It's like okay. The Gulf of Darien. It's right. Another way of saying Gulf, basically. And he was, again, he was another trader. And, you know, Chris, you could probably say this in a good Welsh accent, but he was basically spending his time with the indigenous people there. He got embedded with them. He loved it. He was talking about how, like, he was...
They treat me like a god, you see.
Yeah, basically. He said that when he was traveling back home, that he was so ingrained in the culture that the other Englishmen and Welshmen didn't recognize him.
I mean, ingrained in the culture, isn't it?
And he left that area promising that he would return and marry one of the women that he'd met there, which just, you know, he definitely
will,
didn't.
I'll return, I will. You would be my betrothed.
He definitely got himself, he like impregnated her and then panicked and just ran away, didn't he?
I will be back. Being a Scotsman.
I mean, you just saying I will be back in a Welsh accent just makes me want to see a remake of Terminator. But with a Welshman.
You'll come with me if you want to live.
That'd be a better film. It would be like, I love Terminator, but that would be a better film.
Do you know Sarah Connor?
You need your car, your boots, and your motorcycle.
It's a good film. So, yeah.
Well, I never. I'll be back.
Lionel Wafer basically tells William...
this is all made up, isn't it?
No, well, yeah. I mean, this is the thing.
Hello, like, my name is Lionel Wafer.
I don't know.
And I'm a king in the Isthmus of Darien, you see.
It's difficult to know whether Lionel's the guy that's making it up or William is, because it could be either. Like, William's definitely dodgy. But Lionel tells him the story. Lionel Wafer tells him the story of like this tropical paradise. It's like a sheltered bay. The people there are very friendly. They're very accepting. If one woman says that, you know, I'm the father of her son, don't listen to her. She's obviously lying. And it's like this rich and fertile land of opportunity. And Patterson kind of becomes infatuated with this idea. And he thinks like this is an incredible opportunity. This is somewhere where he could make an incredible amount of money. But he also feels that like the key to this is because the Bay of Darien, the Isthmus of Darien. Darien is basically what we call Panama today. And William realizes, like, we need something that is the equivalent of what we know as the Panama Canal. And this idea had been floated around for a while. It's this thinnest point between the Americas where instead of having to go round the landmass for miles, they could just cut over there. It would be incredible for trade. It would open up the world to a variety of different trade routes and make everything much, much easier. You know, the Panama Canal is incredibly important today. And these people have been trying to figure it out even way back in the 17th century. And William, like I said, was obsessed with it. So he started traveling around Europe trying to sell the idea of, like, hey, I want to go there and build a colony and then build a land route, a trade route over this area of, you know, the Americas. He went to, obviously, Holland. He was living there. He tried to sell it to them. He tried to sell it to the Holy Roman Empire. Neither of them were very interested. He didn't go to Spain to try and sell it to them, and that was because Spain already had a colony there. So, you know, So as we know, a lot of the Western world at this time was basically going and just claiming land for themselves, regardless of the people that were already living there. Spain were in Darien.
Kind of like last week.
Yes, very, very similar. Yeah.
Take that, Putin. Son of a bitch.
We got him.
Mission accomplished.
Release the banner. So he's going around various places.
Invaded Ukraine.
Ukraine, it's lovely. It's lovely this time of year.
Have you ever been to Odessa? It's beautiful.
Yeah, he's going around Europe, he's trying to sell it. Nobody is buying. Nobody's very interested. And he goes back to England, and he's continuing to build his wealth, and he's an investor, he's a merchant, he's a wealthy banker, economist, merchant. He's just one of those guys at this time.
So
that just
is he like the hype man for this? Is he the front man? Or
yeah.
He's the chief banter officer for this enterprise.
Very well, maybe.
I mean, does he have like a conglomerate that he's with, or is he
no,
just a one-man band?
Not yet.
Like...
He's a one-man band right now. So he's traveling around. He's trying to sell this to people. He is a one-man band trying to sell this and just do his own thing and say, like, hey, give me money, give me people, give me boats. I'll go over and do this. While he's doing this and while he's investing in other things, he also just kind of, as a side thing, sets up the Bank of England. So
little side hustle.
Yeah, little side hustle is Scotland. A Scotsman invented the Bank of England. No big deal. But yeah, wow. 1691, he wrote this pamphlet called A Brief Account of the Intended Bank of England. And the idea was so popular, it was approved in 1694 by the king. And William became the director of the Bank of England. And that was it. This is how the Bank of England was created. It was the first time it was ever invented. He just kind of did it on a whim as a side thought. He had to withdraw from the board less than a year later because of a disagreement with a colleague or a financial scandal. And this is something that kind of boils up with him a few times, is like something he's like involved. Something happens and they're like, you're not allowed to be involved anymore. And it's like... Is he the one doing the embezzlement? Is he a bit of an idiot? Or is he just like not paying attention? He's too excited. He's too much of a hype man that he's not.
It sounds a bit like Elon Musk, like slightly flawed dude, smart dude, who's clearly capable of doing pretty massive things, but seems to also like court a lot of controversy or like do stupid things and rub people the wrong way.
Yeah,
maybe not so much. I mean, Musk, to be fair, hasn't really been driven from companies, but he does sound like an archetype. If he was a 21st century man, he would be a total Silicon Valley guy with a great idea, sets it up, and then gets asked to leave because
details are for the little man.
drives the company into the ground.
Yeah. He turns up to the office in flip-flops, high on ecstasy. It's that sort of guy. Yeah.
He's on Molly again. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I better get his mother on the phone for an intervention.
So this scandal that happens, whatever kicks him off the board of the Bank of England, after that, sends him up to Scotland. So he goes back home to Scotland and he settles in Edinburgh. And it's in Edinburgh that he becomes a vocal supporter of the Bank of Scotland. So the Bank of England's created, and then they're like, oh, if England can do it, we can do it as well. The weird thing is that the Bank of Scotland was founded by John Holland, who was an Englishman. So Bank of England set up by Scotsman William Paterson, Bank of Scotland set up by an Englishman, John Holland.
What about the Bank of Holland?
Set up by a Welshman.
Called James
Wafer. And so this is where he is. And it is...
And is he still at the same time pursuing this idea of a colony in Panama?
He's definitely not lost this idea. Right, it's still in the back of his head. And but
is Darien like his retirement, you know, retirement scheme type thing?
It is his... I don't know what a good analogy is, but like, you know, when somebody's like, you know, when somebody like the directors, they're given some big Marvel movie and they're like, well, you did such a good job with that Marvel movie. You can make anything that you want. And then they make just junk. They make that Sean Connery movie where he's in the underpants and he's shooting the giant floating heads and stuff like that. I can't remember.
Right. Zardoz.
Yeah. It's that sort of thing. And right now he's just made his great Marvel movie. And everybody's like, you're so good. You're the darling director. You can do whatever you want. But before we get into what he does next, we need to get some like historical context of where Scotland and Britain is at the moment. Because we're right in the middle of the Union of the Crowns, which we talked about in our, I think we did an election episode where we talked about like how Scotland kind of got to the position of having one government, then two governments, and whether we wanted independence and all that type of stuff. This is also kind of part of James 3.5, which Chris talked about in a few episodes ago. But basically, James 3.5, he unites the crowns, 1603. And he is effectively one person wearing two crowns because they're united by the crowns. It's called like a personal union, I think. No, a social union, but not a political union. So they're not governed by one body. They're not governed by one government. Scotland still has an independent government. And the crown passes through a few hands through various different generations. And around the time that we're talking about, it is held by James the Second of England, James the Seventh of Scotland. So James 4.5, if you will. And this is where that James gets ousted by his nephew / son-in-law, who is a Dutchman, William of Orange, who is fighting with his cousin wife against her dad. You all follow that? Because it's this time that we all kind of have to remember that like British and European royalty is basically just Shameless, but with fancy clothes. So to go through that again... There's James the Second of England. His daughter is married to her cousin, and the two of them are fighting her dad, James the Second of England, for his crown.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's difficult. This took me a while to like figure out what the fuck was happening, because there's times where you're trying to follow like a royal family tree in Europe, and it's just a circle. It's infuriating because they're all marrying their cousins and their nephews and all that type of stuff.
That's why they all look the same.
Yeah. Anyway, and this is also part of like there's uprisings in Scotland. This is part of like the divide. That's why like William, this Dutchman William is William of Orange. There's like the whole fight between Britain becoming formerly being Catholic and then it becoming Protestant when William comes in. James was Catholic. King Billy, as he was commonly known in Scotland, was a Protestant. So this is a large, important part of like British history as well. But it effectively ended with Queen Anne on the throne and then the Act of Union eventually coming in 1707. We are currently talking about like 1694-95, so late 1690s, where like all this is kind of going on in the background. There's all this turmoil, there's fights between royal families, Protestants versus Catholics, Scotland against England, all this kind of nonsense is happening. In addition to this, Scotland is economically screwed. Since the uniting of the crowns, England has been trying to kind of squash Scotland and get more and more control over them. And one of the ways that they've been doing it is basically applying these laws and making all Scottish shipping and trading having to go through England. So they were basically paying dues, they were having to accept, like England had to approve everything that Scotland was doing in terms of their foreign trade. Scotland didn't have any significant exports, so they were struggling from that perspective. And then on top of it, around the 1690s was one of the coldest decades in Scotland for literally hundreds of years, with Scotland losing like 10 to 15% of its population just because of the cold. So Scotland is just screwed. They don't have a proper identity. They don't have a proper monarchy. Their economy is buggered. They have no trade. And then on top of it, there's this insane cold snap that comes in, kills a large portion of the population.
Having a midlife crisis.
Yes, by the sounds very, of it. Very much yeah. So.
So it's looking for a new hobby.
Yes. Anything to distract them from this disaster that they're living in. And it's around this time that they get into like a variety of different ideas and thoughts on how they can improve things. They do things like they revolutionize the school, the Scottish public school system, because they're like, okay, we're going to work for the future of Scotland and the next generation and the generation after that. And, you know, we talked in other podcasts that Scotland actually has a really good, or at least used to have a really good education system, good public school system. And this was the kind of the start of that. They also did something else that I've lost in my notes. I don't remember. But in addition to kind of like these various kind of things that they were trying to get involved in, they also set up and established the... Oh, yeah, they set up the Bank of Scotland. That's what I was talking about. So they're revolutionizing the Scottish education system. They're setting up the Bank of Scotland to be like, this is how we can like control our own economy. This is how we can control our own money. We're going to set this up. It's going to be great. And then most significantly for our story, they established the Company of Scotland Trading to Africa and the Indies. That is the full name of the company. We're just going to refer to it as the Company of Scotland. Stupid name, shitty name. It is what it is. Company of Scotland. So this company was created by the Scottish Parliament to support and pursue Scottish trading opportunities in Africa and Indies, as the name suggests. And our hero, William, was heavily involved in the setup of this company. So this is what he was doing. While everything else is going on, he saw the opportunity. And he was a patriot. He loved Scotland. He was Scottish. And he was like, I want my country to do better. If I make a shit ton of money out of it at the same time, that'll be great. So he persuades the Scottish Parliament to set up the Company of Scotland. And he convinces them that the best thing that they can do is establish a colony in Panama, in Darien, that can control the trade across the continent and between the oceans. And that's why a lot of the times the company is also known as the Scottish Darien Company as well.
Okay, but why is he doing that with the Scottish Parliament when the British Empire has been so successful doing its thing? And the British Empire covers Scotland, doesn't it? I mean...
Right.
Was this just an identity crisis?
Well, Scotland, that's what I'm saying, that there was this social union, but there wasn't a political union at the time. We're before the true union of the crowns. So okay. Scotland was still semi-independent at the point. It still was technically two crowns. James 4.5 was known as James II of Scotland, James II of England, James 7th of Scotland. That was his full title.
Okay.
And so England weren't they weren't sharing their wealth with Scotland. They were, in fact, oppressing Scotland and trying to bleed them dry where they could. And William and the Scottish Parliament saw this as an opportunity for us to kind of step up and be like, yeah, we're independent. We're our own people. We can do this by ourselves. So he said, this is the best idea. I've heard it from this genius Welshman. He said, we got to go over to this place. It's a paradise. We set up a colony. It's going to be dead easy. We can control the trading between the two oceans. And they had this idea of this, like, you know, mecca, multinational, multicultural trading hub that would basically benefit every nation in the world, and Scotland would be at the center of it. And it would just make an incredible amount of money for Scotland and an incredible amount of money for Paterson. It was...
I mean, he's not too wrong with regards to the Panama Canal, like how important that has turned out to be.
Exactly. It's technically a solid idea. And they're not necessarily selling, what is it, selling like a duck or something, or selling a goose? Is there not a phrase around that, like that?
Chicken Kiev.
Selling a chicken Kiev, that's it. They're not selling a chicken Kiev. And so this idea is known as the Darien Scheme, which anything that has the word scheme in it these days is just like, that's ropey. Yeah, I mean, you call it...
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Lost kind of started losing its way when they introduced the Darien Scheme in later seasons. Before that, I quite liked the mystery, but when it all became about the Darien Scheme, just, you know, the time travel when they went into the past at the start, for the start of the Darien Scheme, I just...
You're very silly.
Speaking of Lost, when you guys were struggling at home under your various, you know, issues, I was actually on a hike in Hawaii. And it was actually one of the places where they filmed a lot of Lost. So it was nice.
I said it before, and I'll say it again. Why are you being like this?
Did you see, have they left the set behind of the old Darien
Scheme? Was it polar bear?
There was a lot of weird, unexplained black smoke.
Right.
That never came up after the first season. Mm. Yeah.
Are we actually in purgatory? Is this what happened? Did Chris and I die?
Case. You might be dead. Sorry.
Oh, man.
We are in purgatory. William Paterson was trying to sell paradise to the Scots. And so that's what he was doing. Thank you. So he was running around. They needed an investment from different people. So he was going to Hamburg. He went to Amsterdam. He went to London. And all of these cities, all of these countries got involved. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll give you money. This sounds like a good idea. To your point, Chris, like, it makes complete sense. If you're willing to do it, let's do this. Here's some money. In addition, also, Scotland put in a fair chunk of its own GDP as part of it, to kind of kick off the endeavor. But King Billy, William the Orange, was very hesitant to fully support this idea. So at the time, and then, you know, pretty much always, England was at war with France. And so the concern of King William was that if Scotland set up this colony in a Spanish settlement, then the Spanish would be pissed off and then would unite with the French in their war against England. So the whole problem was, oh, I don't want to piss off the Spanish by allowing you to go over there.
Yeah. You never want to piss off the Spanish.
They're
very hot-blooded as a people.
Yeah, they've got those like weird bulls and those guys in the fancy shorts and the little vests. Terrifying.
Yeah.
So King William forced England, so forced London to take their money out of the scheme and say, like, you can't invest in this anymore. You're not going to do this. King William was also Dutch, so he also went to the Dutch government and said, hey, you're not allowed to invest in this anymore. You shouldn't do this. You can't trust the Scots. You definitely can't trust the Welsh. Take your money out of this endeavor. Then on top of it, you had the East India Company. And, you know, the East India Trading Company, one of the biggest traders, almost the size of a government themselves. They were basically like a force unto themselves. We're like, you can't do this. This is too much of a competition for us. And at the time, capitalism wasn't really the most prevalent economic system. It was mercantilism or mercantism. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but basically the concept, it was like this whole trading thing, you know, traveling around the world, stealing out other people's stuff and then selling it for yourself. But the basic concept of mercantilism, which I'm definitely mispronouncing, is that there is only so much wealth in the world. Instead of capitalism, which is like we all grow the wealth together and we all make money, mercantilism basically says, if you're making money, I'm losing money because you're taking slice of the pie away from me. And that's what the East India Trading Company believed, that like by Scotland and the Company of Scotland making money in Darien, it was actually going to negatively impact the East India Trading Company. So they were staunchly against this. They thought they were going to lose by this happening. And so they effectively sued the Company of Scotland. Through them suing the Company of Scotland, they effectively were able to stop any additional foreign investment in the company. So with that, Hamburg pulled out. So all investors have pulled out of the Company of Scotland and the Darien scheme.
That's except for Scotland.
Except for Scotland. And this is kind of
left
when,
holding the bag.
Yeah, this is kind of when things get a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Like inspiring. And I think what I'll do is tell this part of it, of how we get set up, and then we'll wrap up this week's episode and then move on to the next one. So this is a little bit inspiring. It's kind of cool. So they're in a spot where they still believe in the idea. William Paterson is still pushing for the idea. Everybody is basically against Scotland. Like all these other foreign countries that had invested have pulled their money out of it. England is actively trying to fight them. Scotland has tried to make their own way, but they're under the yoke of the English rule. And they have this plan to kind of like step up from under their boot and you know, become a world leader to a degree. But obviously it's ruined by the English. So William and the Company of Scotland go back to their roots. They go back to the Scottish people, and they basically do the first Kickstarter. They go out to everybody in Scotland and say, hey, you give us money, you invest in the Company of Scotland.
Sounds like a pyramid scheme.
Oh, Johnny, what?
Scotland invented the pyramid scheme, is that what you're saying?
No, Kickstarter, crowdfunding, like the positive side.
I appreciate your positive spin on this, Rory.
This could not go wrong, don't worry, especially when...
I feel like this episode ends with like an online form that we all have to submit money
to. Everybody who could spare any money in Scotland gives money to the company. Like,
oh dear.
I'm talking like any ordinary person who had a couple of pounds under their mattress for a rainy day, they're investing in it because they believe.
There's a lot of wee old ladies there that have been taken advantage of, isn't there?
They estimated it's between like 25 and 50% of the liquid capital of Scotland.
What?
All from these individuals, like the general population of Scotland, invested in this idea, invested in the Company of Scotland.
Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign.
Yes, it is. It's very much that. It's all, you know, dollars and dimes. It's pounds and pence. And they got enough money. They got something like £500 million, which at the time, like I said, was like a chunk of our GDP, of our liquid wealth at the time. And
that's an enormous amount at that time.
And it was enough to fund the venture, to build the ships and to get out there and set up the Darien scheme to get it going. And that's what they did. And so Well, not next week, but next time we will tell you, I'll tell you about what happens when they get there, when the ships launch off. Because I think what we're going to do next week is we're going to take a break from the Darien scheme, and we're going to talk about, what is it, season 6 of Outlander? We're finally talking about Outlander. Is that what we're doing?
We're doing our Outlander watch-along episode.
I don't know if this is a good idea, but we're doing it.
It's a great idea. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of long, rambling messages and voice messages from Outlander fans so far. So if you haven't left one yet, keep them coming, and we will get through all of them, and we will dissect the show and how successful it's been and what all our thoughts are on it. And we've had a little off-camera discussion on what we all think of Outlander, and there's some hot takes, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Takes are hotter than a chicken Kiev just out the oven.
Some sexy men in kilts and ladies in bodices takes. So yeah, we're going to take a wee bit of a break. So if you're looking for the second half of the Darien scheme story, you got 2 weeks to wait, but we're going to give you a little bit of Outlander juiciness in between, a little Outlander Darien scheme sandwich, which, you know, who doesn't want one of them? So I guess with that, everybody, we'll finish the story in 2 weeks' time. This'll do, lads. This'll do nicely. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thisilldonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thisilldopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @thisilldopod. You can also visit our website, thisilldonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram @JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs, and kisses from the Thistle Do Nicely pod.
I hope you guys didn't just hear that my fly was undone.
Is that what you were doing when you leaned back? You're zipping it up. We can't see. You could have kept it open.
Oh, come on, Rory. It's left a lot of women very satisfied.
Sufficiently satisfied.